Well, it'll be nice.
Under 9.0, under corporate services, we have nothing to report today.
Thank you, Christine.
10.0, engineering and works, we have 10.1, odor issue discussion, Counselor McLeod. The Director of Engineering, Brad Roders, coming to the presentation desk.
Yes. I called Brad and asked him if he would be available to give us an update on the de-sludging from his perspective and what's planned after that, if this, if there's any plans if the odor does not go away, what are our next steps. And first, I would like to say, like before I get Brad to talk, is this odor issue has been one of the most major issues that the community has had to deal with for a long time. And I know it's disturbing to have to deal with it. I understand that the municipality have been communicating with the public through various updates publicly. I feel a little bit sort of neglected as a councillor that council have not been brought up to date personally. We're getting all of these from the public perspective, but councillors who are the governing body, and I understand that we have a key role in this, have not been brought up to date for emails sent to us about who the consultants or the experts are that are included in the report. It just says experts, but we don't know who those experts are. We don't know if they're hired by us. We don't know if we're spending money on those experts. So I felt that we were a little bit, you know, we possibly could have been informed a bit more about keeping up to date on these sorts of very important issue. The odor issue should have been, that's my own personal opinion, and this is all my own personal, I hadn't discussed this with anyone, that this odor issue should have been on the council agenda from the beginning rather than someone, as a councillor myself, having to have it added. It's that important enough that it should have been brought up to date at every council meeting. Whether there was something to say about it or not, it should have still been on the agenda, just so that it is publicly recorded in the minutes. There has been a few times in the beginning, but there hasn't been any basic updates other than when the gallery have asked questions. So that's why I thought it's time to add it to the agenda so that it is recorded and that we can have Brad give us an update on what's happening over there at the lagoon.
Thank you, Councilor McLeod. CAO, you missed a question that was asked earlier by Councilor McLeod. She had indicated that there was some concern that councillors were not advised by email of all of the experts and when this was occurring and what they were doing and their names. And I was wondering if perhaps you may want to respond to that comment.
I guess it's as staff would recognize it an issue. Staff do the research. We do not provide updates to council on all the details of all of our work. So we talk to and we don't talk to. It's a matter of staff function to carry out the administrative and operational duties of the municipality and our responsibilities as we do. When there's a relevant issue or topic that council needs to be aware of, we provide emails or we provide, whether it's in camera discussions or public discussions on what those topics are and what the details are. To provide this certainly isn't a positive issue for the community, and to continue to put it on the agenda and continue to raise the issue in the media and the public is not helpful to our community. And so we're doing our best behind the scenes to do our research, consult with experts, find a solution as quickly as possible. I don't want us to be in a situation where we're in like Town Lunenburg, where they're like 2 or 3 years and they finally found a solution. If we're at that case, then I think we're in serious trouble. And so we're trying to do it as quickly as possible. The more time we spend trying to provide updates and do all those types of things, the less time we're spending on actually doing, trying to solve the solution and doing the work. So I think we provided reasonable updates to council. Council want more updates, council can request those, so I think we provided the updates as relevant as we've had them. It's relevant and it's up to date and timely information has been available. Council has expressed their opinion on several occasions. They want certain types of testing done or certain types of investigations done. Staff have done those research. Staff have consulted those people. Some of the reports, as we talked about today with our EDM consultants, people are on vacation, people aren't interested in doing the type of work we're doing. The done the best we can in limited time we've had to try to find a solution as quickly as possible.
So Brad, would you have an update you could provide?
Yep, I'll talk a little bit about the desludging. I'm just going to it a little bit. So our sewer treatment plant in South Queens, as everyone knows, is located down Hank Snow Drive in the Works Compound Yard. It was constructed in 2001. It came online September 2001. It contains three polyethylene, which is a very thick plastic, 60 mil plastic, cells or ponds, and they're all interconnected with one another. There's two sand filter beds within that area as well, and of course the aeration and UV or ultraviolet disinfection equipment in the building. So that is the sewer treatment plant. The sewer is first received into cell number one. So that's what we call the primary cell. So that's where you're going to see the greatest amount of sludge, and of course the strongest sludge, because that's where it settles first. Okay. Now, as part of our normal and ongoing operations, you normally remove the sludge from these cells every 20 to 25 to 30 years, depending on the usage of the cells, you know, the volume going into it. Now, right now, we're at year 18. Okay. Now, half of that is actually with the addition of our septic receiving station. If you remember, we built that in 2010. So that came along in about half of that lifespan of 18. So given the odor generation this year, we all made the decision to move that desludging ahead a few years, which makes sense because we're putting more material into it with the septic receiving station. And just to digress a little bit, some of you may have been on council, but we had a decision to make in just prior to 2010. We either had to build an entirely new sewer treatment plant out at the landfill to handle septic at pretty much the same cost, $1.5 million plus, or take advantage of what we already had. And that's what we did. We took advantage of what we already had, saved over $1 million, and then built that septic receiving station there. So what we do every year is we set aside a certain amount of money to pay for this desludging, because we know we're going to have to do it into the future. So we have money for this, right? So we've got it paid for, we initiated it, we all voted on it, you guys voted on it. So we're desludging the primary cell right now. I'll talk about that in a little minute. But remember, there's still two other cells at the septic receiving, or at the sewer treatment plant. There's one big cell, and sometimes we call it cell two and three, but it's really one cell, and it's got a floating baffle in it. It's divided into two, but it's one basin, it's one pond. So they still have sludge in them, but the strength of the sludge is nowhere near the amount that it is in the primary cell. So odors generated primarily in the primary cell. Now, in the next, let's say, 2 to 5 years, could go 8 years, depends on how much money we have in that reserve accrual to pay for the desludging, we still have to desludge those other two cells. So they have to be done in the foreseeable future. You know, not long term, but in the foreseeable future. Now, once that's done, we're going to be a little few years down the road, we'll then have to evaluate that primary cell again. So given our experience this year, it makes sense to do that more often rather than less often, because the only thing you're really doing is you're paying every 5 to 10 to 8 years a couple days extra labor for mobilization costs, you know, pay for them to move the trailers in and the barge and so on. In the overall scheme of things, that's peanuts, right? So in the future, lesson learned, we'll do this more frequently rather than less frequently. Now the desludging process itself, that began the week of July 22nd. It took them 2 days to mobilize. They started desludging the pumping, had the barge set in the ponds, I think on that Wednesday, and they pumped maybe for a day, and they had some pumping problems. Their pump failed on them. So that set us back about a week before they got that all straightened out. So once the repairs were undertaken, the operations resumed continuously. And they will be complete this Thursday. All right, so they'll be done this Thursday. With the demobilization and moving their equipment out on Friday. So that's what they told us yesterday afternoon. All right, so they'll be done. Now, with the sludge removed, the actual sludge material itself, of course, that's pumped in these long bags, odor-proof bags, and they're placed and located in the sand drying pits. The water slowly drains out of the bags, goes down through the sand filters, and the liquid fraction, that goes back to the cells, back to be treated. The dry and inert sludge cake, after a winter of freeze-thaw cycles, that's inert. That's basically soil, right? So what we do with it then, we take that sludge cake, we take it out to the landfill, and we put it on top of our second generation cell as landfill cover, because it's basically soil, all right? Now, given how you handle that sludge cake, that's why you couldn't do all those cells at once, right? Because you need the room that's in those sand filters, right, to place this stuff. Because you can't just place it any old place because there's liquid that runs out of it, right? So we'll let that liquid run out. Next year, I would assume it's going to be done. If not, it'll go through another winter. And then we'll come back, we'll look at it. We'll get to see how much money it's going to cost to do. That's a big cell number two. It's a little bit bigger than the cell we have now, so we'll have a good handle exactly what our cost is. And we'll come forward and then finish that cycle off, and that'll take us all the way back to the primary cell again. Now, some of us will be retired by then, but Adam will still be here. He's a young guy.
Right? Sure.
Hopefully, anyway. And we'll carry on. All right. Now, in terms of the odor, every time, over the last month, I pick up the odor and I can detect a slight difference between the natural odor and the sewage treatment plant odor. A lot of it lately has been the sewage treatment plant odor. That's my opinion, right? Although there are times where you do smell that natural odor as well. But lately, primarily later on now into the summer, my opinion, most of it's sewage treatment plant odor. The sewer treatment plant odor, when you go and you walk around all the cells, and when you get downwind of the primary cell, that's when you pick up the odor. You can walk around the other cells, two and three, and don't pick up the odor. So the strength of the odor is what we're removing now, right? So next week we'll tell the tale, right? You should not smell any smell. Now it's a sewer treatment plant. You're always going to have smells at a sewer treatment plant. Now, I tell people in jest, we're not growing strawberries there, right? It's a sewer treatment plant. But the strength of the odor is what we're doing now, right?
Which is the primary cell, Brad? Is that the big one that's closer to the building, or is...
No, that the one that's where our septic receiving station, there's a bigger cell, that's our what we call cell number two. Mm-hmm. That primary cell would be sort of in the upper right-hand corner, if you look at it that way.
It would be like
the one closest to Mersey Seafoods, like that, that corner up there, right?
So that's the where the odor was coming
correct.
From.
Correct. Yep.
Okay, not the one closer to the building.
That's correct. Yep. But that will have to be the next one we do, though. Mm-hmm. Like what I described, in a few years' time here, mm-hmm. let the reserve build up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Get some money back into it, and we'll need to do that in the next few years.
With right. the additional use of the facility,
yep.
And it was meant to. I think you indicated, or someone indicated that. It's only using 50% of the capacity at the moment.
It's actually way less than 50%.
Way less.
Our capacity is 3.2 million gallons a day. Mm-hmm. In July, we only loaded that about 12% capacity. Mm-hmm. Right. So we have a lot of capacity there, right?
Okay.
What's filling up more than our, as I said, 20, 25, 30 years is because septic is going into it as well. When people get their tanks pumped out, what are they pumping out, right? It's primarily sludge, right? Mm-hmm. So it goes in there, some of it, the process at the septic receiving station, we did a tour there a while ago. Basically we run water through it, and you basically, the wash that's left comes off screens, filters, right? That goes to the landfill, that's solids. But the liquid part, which still has a lot of matter into it, fine particulate matter, that gets pumped up to primary cell. Mm-hmm. And in time, when that settles out, of course, that particulate matter, that settles out and that makes sludge, right? And that accumulates. So it's accumulated a fair amount in there, in that primary cell. Now there's still a lot of sludge, I say a lot of sludge, you know, relatively the same amount of sludge in the other cells, but they don't have the strength of the odor in it. You know, it's not as strong there because the bacteria with the aeration is acting in that primary cell primarily, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other council have a question or comment? Councilor Fancy?
Yeah, Brad, just a few little things. I know we talked here before about the maximize the air because to try to give it, it seemed like they had enough air for the bugs. And have we seen where the maybe through historical data that maybe the you could see things plugging up as the load was increasing, yep. And then things like that, so we could be able to see that, hey, we got a problem with something that maybe we can look at as a future saying, hey, we need to get this.
Now, yes, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. So our equipment, the equipment is all working perfect, no problem with it.
Yeah.
Our effluent standards on discharge to the harbor, right, is all well within regulatory limits, right? Like well within regulatory limits. So the plant is working, all right? It's doing what it's supposed to do. We have noticed in the primary cell, the level that the aeration is invigorated, you can tell by the swell that comes up off the aerators, right? Not quite as strong as cell number two. So they're starting to get, I won't say waterlogged, but they're starting to get inundated by the sludge, a little bit too much sludge there over the aerators. And you could tell just by looking at that, right? Cell number two is great. Cell number three is even better, right? I mean, in terms of the aeration. So the time that it goes through all the three cells, then it goes back to the sewer treatment plant for UV treatment, right? And then it gets pumped back right out to the discharge to the harbor. So it all works fine. So there's no problems with the equipment in terms of inherent sewer treatment plant equipment, right? It's just that it was time to service the cells, right?
Yeah. Along with that, wouldn't you see the amount of excess oxygen in the water and things like that, you'd be able to see, like you can always tell the amount of oxygen that's there.
Yeah.
And also too, like I was saying, like the load on the motor, if you all of a sudden you see it going up, you're maybe getting plugs.
Yeah.
And you say like, uh-oh, we're having some plugs because our load is going up historically. We were running at this, and now we're running at this to try to maintain the same amount.
Yeah, not so much that. I mean, we even this year, we increased our air as much as we could, right?
Yeah.
So there's a few things that we did early on in this, right, to try to minimize this odor. One thing is to run your, put a little more air in the system, right? Run your oxygen, give it a greater oxygen load, right? And to raise the level of your cells to increase that water column height.
Yeah.
So it gives you more room for the air to work for the bacteria so they don't go anaerobic, right?
Yes, yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
So that's what we already did, Councilor Fancy, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of us concerned with the performance of the equipment, we don't have any concern. You know, everything is fine.
Along with, and I know if you have that down at the mill a lot, filamentous bacteria comes in sometimes. When you do the testing, that creates a blanket where things don't let things settle. Do we have any problem with anything like that within this? It's a time now I can ask you because I'm here.
Do we have, I didn't hear what you said.
Filamentous bacteria, that we used to develop, I know we've down at the mill, we used to have at times where we, the bacteria is almost like a Venus fly trap.
Yeah.
It kind of goes out and bags together and doesn't let things settle because it gets laid on.
Yeah,
the top.
We saw a little bit of that later on in the summer.
Yes.
All right. You could tell it was chaining together a little bit.
Yes.
Right. You know. So and that was one of the indicators. You know that it was time to service.
Yes.
You know, in addition to the odor generating.
And I know the other thing was that you said about the turning over, and I know what you mean. So you get like pockets of, it's always like pockets in the sludge,
yeah,
and all of a sudden
yep,
it loose.
That's right.
Comes up through, and it just always turns.
It would go to the surface, right? Yeah. Yeah. And we saw an increase of that this summer, over and above years in the past, right?
Yes. Is that kind of heat, do you find?
Yeah, I'd say so, a little bit, yeah. Water's warmer right this time of year. And there's less water there because you have a greater accumulation of sludge, right? And that goes back to, I say, that's one of the first things we did is to raise the water level in the, you know, as much as you could in the ponds themselves.
Thank you.
Any other counselor, question, comment? Brad, any additional?
Nope, it's good.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Moving on to 11.0, we have nothing today under finance. 12.0, recreation and community facilities. We have 12.1, physical activity strategy rewrite steering committee. I would ask Megan Roberts, Director of Recreation, and Norma Merrill, MPEL, Municipal Physical Activity Leader, to come to the desk. And we have a recommendation in 12.1. Who would like to take the lead on 12.1? Councilor Phillips?
I so move that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality appoint Dr. Celeste Johnson of Port Mattoon, Maya Ullman of Caledonia, Hubert Rodden of Milton, Tara Smith of Port Jolly, Lindsay Reinhardt of Caledonia, Taryn Jollymore of Western Head, and Stacy Thorburn of Milton as a citizen representatives on the Physical Activity Rewrite Steering Committee effective immediately. And if the Council of the Region of Queens appoint blank and blank as council representatives on the Physical Activity Steering Committee effective immediately.
Seconder to that? Councilor Fancy, and at this point, what we need to do is have councilors advise who would like to be on this committee, and of course, we'll have a vote if necessary. So we need two representatives of council. So who would be interested to be on the committee? Volunteers? Councillor Fisk? Volunteers? Any other member? Councillor Fancy, volunteers? That is two. Do we have any other members of council? Second call. Third and final call. We have two members of council that have indicated an interest, and that is Councillor Fisk and Councillor Fancy. So,
would you like me to reread that? Just the last part?
Yes.
Okay. And that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality appoint Councillor Fisk and Councillor Fancy as council representatives on the Physical Activity Rewrite Steering Committee effective immediately.
And the seconder for that was Councillor McLeod. So, would you like to give us a brief update on this?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Daigle, members of the council. I think if you'll indulge me for just a moment, you might ask why another study? And it's a fair question. Our existing physical activity strategy is 10 years old, so that's quite long in terms of sort of how fast the world changes. Part of the requirements of the MPAL / Physical Activity Leadership Program is a working, guiding document that guides our work, okay? And currently we do not have that, okay? And it's truly important work to know how we align with provincial initiatives like the Let's Get Moving, how SHIFT, which is an older adults program to encourage older adults to move, our upcoming work of recreation for all policy, which is part of that work, is our community investment fund work. Is it, how does that align? And really, how does the things that we are doing, like play boxes and like Queens Walks, is all that the most effective way to affect change at the molecular level, which means to encourage all of us to make changes to be healthier? So, and what's with limited resources? So this is the work that this committee will do. It will be short, it will be intense. There'll be lots of consultation. There'll be those who sit on the committee, Councillor Fisk and Fancy, be prepared for a bunch of reading, okay? And the consultant and I will primarily lead the process. He particularly, and the consultant, is a gentleman named Frank Gallant, Peak Experiences, who's done lots of this type of work in other jurisdictions. But it's going to be fun. And at the end of it, and we're going to have some meetings in August. We'll have some public meetings throughout the county to sort of verify that we're on the right track. And then at the end, and we'll get this done in the next quarter, September to December, we will truly have that guiding document. And to know, hopefully, that we're on the right track, to make the changes and to encourage people, to encourage communities, and to get this important work done. So stay tuned. There's, you know, it's as I said, it's going to be short bursts, but it's going to be fun, and it's going to be a good learning experience for all of us.
Any questions of councilors? Councilor Mews?
I see you wanted two citizen appointments, and you have that to take seven?
That's correct. By the July 19th deadline, we did a call for proposals, different types of promotion. As of July 19th, we had actually three that met the deadline. We had four that didn't, but did express an interest. The suggestion is that since we do have this, I guess, more universal interest, more geographically dispersed, that you know, more input, citizen input into the process would be a good thing. So we're actually suggesting that we expand the committee, the citizens part of the steering committee to be quite a bit larger. I've spoken with the consultant and my colleague Debbie Smith at Department of Health and Wellness, and they said basically bring it on. You know, so it creates I guess a little bit more scheduling, getting everybody in the same room at the same time. But if you believe, as we do, in the value of especially citizen input, not to just disparage councillor input, but it's really, really important in the process. So we'll make it work if council endorses that suggestion.
Councilor McLeod?
If we have the staff and we have the community input, and from looking at the names that are chosen, there's a lot of expertise within that group, why do we have to have a consultant?
Consultant was strongly recommended by our colleagues at Department of Health and Wellness, who funded Mr. Gallant to do similar work. And I think they bring a more, as does our colleagues from Health and Wellness, who will sit in on the process, bring a more universal approach and learn from other communities. But in short strokes, it was strongly recommended that we engage the services of a consultant to get this done. And to sort of meet the expectations is the wrong word, but I can't think of a better one, Councillor, to meet what the province expects out of the end product of this process.
And what is the province's role in this strategy?
Province is intimately involved both with helping develop the terms of reference. They provide us funding for it, not all, but a good portion of the funding. They will sit in on the planning process, and they'll make sure that what we are doing aligns with the priorities of government. And if you have time, I strongly encourage all of you to take a look at the Let's Get Moving strategy, not just for Councillors Fisk and Fancy, who will be on the committee, but it really sees how we have to change our mindset and our thinking about how we encourage people to be more active. You know, short bursts, where you live, at work, walking, social connectivity, not a heavily programmed based model, which a lot of rec departments do, and that we as council and staff have kind of endorsed stepping away from. But the province has been, you know, quite involved, and they want to make sure that the end product with the physical activity strategy aligns with all that, which is really the sort of the best practices of how to get people to make behavioral change effectively.
So the MPEL program, mm-hmm. which you are the person involved with that.
Correct.
Is that what this is all about? Does this continue with that position?
Correct.
So without this strategy, there's no position?
I guess it would, if we do our job well, then part of that would be to encourage communities to take their own leadership and people therein. I guess that would be counselor's role at the end of the term of the MPAL to see if that position needed to be continued.
Strategy is a function of his
MPAL.
Job. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So
correct.
That's his guiding document for the work that he completes as part of his job. So we've been going off of our old one, but you have to obviously update because it's outdated. So that is a requirement of his job.
So that is the basic guiding principle or mm-hmm. guiding document that norm you follow
correct.
When you do your job. Is that right?
We will when we get it redone.
Okay.
That's great. And it should be counselor, I think, to some extent, counsel's guide, too, as to how we allocate resources
well, yes,
to
course,
do that,
but,
yeah,
yeah.
In the broader context. But and just a particular example is we put in an application this summer, actually, to continue free swimming at our outdoor pools. And the very first question that our director and I get asked is, how does this align with your strategy? So we're seeing that already, is how funding in particular, and we've got a bunch of other applications that we have to get in, and in the absence of an updated guiding strategy, it makes our job to get and to continue things which we know are good, creating free opportunities, whether they be in outdoor pools, whether they be at Queen's Place, whether they be wherever, is a good thing, because the inability to pay is certainly a barrier for a lot of people. So that's the type of work that we need to do and get that done and get it done quickly. So we have a guide for me and for all of us. It's council's document as to how we affect this change properly.
Is this a term position?
It is.
This?
Okay. It is, correct.
So this is kind of a new a new position with this document as well, to how it works. Right. Your job was to develop this strategy.
Part of it, that's correct, yeah, correct.
I agree, it's something that we need to do for sure, but I'm wondering how does it affect your current workload? Because, as you said, it's going to be intense
mm-hmm.
for the next little bit, but you also have program you do
yep.
to satisfy the MPAL
yep.
program. So how does that affect your day-to-day?
I hope it'll make it, once we get it done, I hope it'll.
I'm talking about during the period.
Right now, it's fine. When council, we sort of collectively made that decision to step back from offering a lot of sort of that buckshot approach to programming. I think that's a good step. And I think what we do here and then with the directions therein will backfill that, right? And then we start to move towards, okay, you know, a lot of direct programmings are only affecting a small group of people. And we've moved sort of to things that hopefully affect more people. And in the transition in the meantime, yeah, it's going to be tight. But that's fine. We'll still get the amount of programming that we, you know, skating school and all that kind of stuff. We'll still be able to do that.
Okay.
It's no problem.
I will say it would be nice to have you come back to council and tell us about the MPAL program, what you've been doing,
mm-hmm.
how, you know, what the uptake has been, because we really don't get, you know, updated on this. And so some of us, as we just, you know, we're not even sure, you know, how long the program lasts.
Understood.
But it would be really nice to hear, you know, all the successes and the things that you're working on, the things you're planning. And maybe it's at the end of this the next step, but it'd be nice to hear what you're up to and how it's working.
Understood.
Thank you.
Councilor Johnson? Well, I think this is past due, but my question comes with how it is aligned with the strategy that came before council that leads us to the point, and I guess maybe it's education on my part, and it's probably going to be education on the public's part, is the definition of program, whether we're going to suggest a program as compared to actually run a program. Mm-hmm. So how do we get that community involvement? Is that something that's going to spin out of this committee?
100%.
How you get community involvement into running programs that, first of all, the community identify, and second of all, your position through the rec department and MPAL suggests that it would be a good fit in those areas.
100%, Councillor John. And whether it's direct programming, whether it's taking advantage of parks and trail, like natural environment, built environment, social connectivity as a program.
Right.
You know, we always think of programs as book a hall, book a dance instructor, go try to find people, okay? And what it doesn't always, and that's not an ineffective model, but it doesn't always have to be that way. Like there's, and I'll use walking just an example. The essence, the core of the Let's Get Moving strategy, which encourages people to make sort of baby steps, to just to start to move as much as their ability and their incentive and their motivation allows, walking as a vehicle to do that. And Councillor, you can do that anywhere, pretty much. You know, you can do that on sidewalks, you can do that on trails, you can do that in Queen's Place. So I know that the physical activity strategy will clarify what we think our role should be in direct programming and how we encourage the community and support the community to do that themselves, because we're just two people, and she's Megan has got a lot of stuff she has to get done. So you know, we have to encourage communities to both individually and collectively to do this and to do that sort of program development.
Well, I didn't volunteer to be on the board because we've got a couple of very strong people.
You sure do. You sure do. Yeah.
But I sure do hope that an outcome from this strategy is advertising and communication and the education components, because I think that's where a lot of our programming is falling down. That people's not aware of not just the program, but how do you do it?
Yeah.
Especially the further you get away from the nucleus of Liverpool and stuff like that. We have the opportunities. I think of the gal that's going to run the volleyball program in North Queens.
Yeah.
Very competent person.
Yeah.
But is that program aligned with whatever the strategy says it should look like for that area? Those type of alignments and things like that.
Understood. Thank
anyway,
you.
I just hope that's part of the outcome. I'd be disappointed if it wasn't, because I think that's one of the pieces that's fallen by the wayside that I'm aware of.
Council, I guess I pictured it near the end of the process, Councillor, but I mean, you know, if you wanted to see sort of a work in progress to see if it's, you know, but certainly coming back to council to say, here's what we're thinking collectively as a community, is before we finalize the document, is absolutely part of it, 100%.
Thank you.
Any other councillor have a comment or a question on this issue? Are you ready for the question?
Yes, sir.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Norm.
You're welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Moving on to 12.2, appointments to Queens Place and Mirror Center Board of Directors. So we'd like to take the lead on this recommendation. Councillor Johnson.
Okay. I'd like to recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality appoint Jessica Van Dyne Evans and Jeremy Miles to Queens Place Emera Center Board of Directors for a 2-year term beginning September 1st, 2019.
Seconded to that motion, Councillor Fisk. Megan, would you like to give us an update?
Sure. So we had originally had put out advertisement to be part of Queens Place. It closed the end of June. We had 4 spots on top of our 2 council positions, and after that process we had 2 remaining spots, so we advertised again, and these are the 2 individuals that you see in front of you. I think they'll be good for the committee. They're, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, we talked about this in our meeting, they're younger, and I think they'll bring a different perspective. They're not necessarily users of Queen's Place either, which I think is really important. And I think they'll bring a different perspective to the committee. And it's great that we have a full committee now. So we had, we're going to, I think, do great work.
When are your board meetings?
Tuesday evening, the second Tuesday of every month, for the majority.
Tuesday.
Yep.
And they're open to the public?
There.
All right, thank you.
Any other councillor have a question or comment on this issue? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. And we are moving on to 12.3. I would ask Steve Burns if he would come forward. He's our manager of events. Who would like to take the lead on 12.3? Councillor Fisk.
Sure.
I also recommend that the council reach out to the municipality and agree to waiver policy 58, consumption of alcohol on municipal-owned properties, as requested by Midway Head Lighthouse Society for August 16, 2019, and that the applicant be required to submit proof of insurance in no less than $2 million per occasion with the Region of Queens municipality as additional insurance, and a copy of the effect liquor license from the province of Nova Scotia to the region, and that all municipality provinces and federal bylaw be restricted adhered to.
Seconded for that motion? Councilor Mews? Steve, would you like to give us a quick update on this?
Quick update is they have their insurance in place and their licensing in place, and they're ready to go upon approval. And they'll get set up and have their opening reception Friday evening.
Any comments or questions of councilors on this issue? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Is it unanimous? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Moving on to 12.4, I would ask Megan Robinson, Director of Recreation, to go back to the presentation of that. 12.4 is Community Investment Fund, Milton Canoe and Camera Club. Is a recommendation. Councilor Fancy, would you like to take the lead on this?
I so recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality provide grant funding to Milton Canoe and Camera Club in the amount of $5,110.82 from 2019-2020 Community Investment Fund budget.
Seconded for that motion? Councilor Mews? Megan, would you like to take
Sure. So we've been working with the Milton Canoe and Camera Club for several months on their application just to make sure everything was in order. There's been a couple changes along the way to it. We've worked with them on their budget to ensure they have everything included, as well as getting quotes for the required items. So what you see before you is the remaining items to finish what they currently have. So it's not replacing existing things, it's new things, because as they are a new location. So this covers the construction and materials for their canoe rack, relocation of their boat house from the previous location, so that's just the storage unit that they use, dock purchase and installation. So they don't currently have a dock on site there, so this is for a dock that will also provide accessibility, so it had to be very specific what they purchased, and of course they ensured that it met their requirements, but they're excited to get these last few things done and be completely finished for right now at their location.
Thank you, Nathan. Any questions or comments of councilors on this issue? Councilor Fancy?
Just trying to understand it, that's all I'm just trying to see, is that they had a proposed budget of $46,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the top, it's requested $23,466.
Right.
So the $46,000 was the initial, and this is coming, this is the second phase or part of what?
So the $46,000 is their overall budget,
right,
for the year. So that's the Milton Canoe and Camera Club budget for the annual year. And then what they asked us for was the projects that you see before you.
Right.
And then they're eligible for their percentage of those projects.
Which is 25% for the new project, right?
Correct. So their projects, the $5,000 is the 25% of their overall projects for the year.
Which was the top of requested, the 23,466?
Correct. So that's what they included on every application they've given to us, even as it changed. They are fully aware of the amount that they're eligible for, so we've communicated that to them. That is what was on their application, though, so that's what I have to put on the communication to you. But they are aware of the eligible costs under their application, and they're aware that they're eligible for 25% of those costs, which is the $5,110.82.
But that doesn't give you 25% of the 23.
Correct. You almost have to take that number, and that's what they included on every application. It is incorrect. But that is the number that was put on their application under the amount being requested. But when you actually go into the application and you work out their eligible costs and the projects, and like I said, we've communicated those to them, so they're fully aware that what they're being funded for is the $5,000.
I just wanted to understand, because I didn't understand all I guess what I have in front of me.
And sometimes when we get these applications, and we have noted that to them, and it's fine, they are fully aware of what they're being funded. Sometimes people don't quite understand the amount and where it comes from and how you get that percentage, but that's part of our communication back to them, and that's what we've done back to them, is that we understand this is what you've asked for, but these are your eligible costs, and you're eligible for the 25% of those.
Right. Thank you.
Councilor Johnson?
I got two questions, but my first one is, did we not fund some of the capital expenditure with the new build and the relocate there before? And second, my second part of that question is, you made reference to the fact that, you know, we helped them source pricing on equipment and things like that. And being a councilor who gets bombarded mostly by the people who get rejected, and we heard in Caledonia from the Heritage Society that there was a lack of communication as to what was needed on application. I just want to make sure that we're, you know, how much staff time is used to help these guys walk through, which I think it should be. I don't disagree with that. But all the people who were refused, how much time was used to help them walk through the process as well?
So perhaps
first one being what were they approved for prior to this?
So we didn't actually help them get those quotes. What we went through is when they submitted their quotes, they have to be comparable quotes. So it's going through their quotes and making sure that what they're submitting to us are comparable quotes, so that we know that what we're funding is a competitive price. That's the same thing that we do with everyone. We certainly aren't telling people where to get their quotes from, especially for this, for example, their dock. We would have no idea what their dock needs are. That's the applicant's responsibility to submit those quotes to us. Our responsibility is to ensure that those quotes are what we require. Yeah. So that we certainly didn't spend time getting the quotes for them.
Well, all I wanted to do was on the record, and I wanted to make it clear as to what our role as a region was to assist with this application versus some of the ones that we've heard of comments contrary.
Sure.
Anyway,
so their
application.
Yep. And their application, when they originally submitted it, was incomplete. So that's part of our job, is to go back to them and ensure that they have submitted a complete application. So people that can submit their application and they've included all of the documentation and all of the quotes and they're correct, we aren't going to go back and ask any additional questions of that, because we have the information. In this case, we didn't, and there was clarifications that needed to be made to them. And sorry, there was another part to your question. Sorry.
Well, did we not fund these folks out of the capital investment fund in the previous, I guess it's called something different, so that
so
changes.
Yes, FDA. And so we went back under it, and some of their projects, so they submitted last year their facility development application, and it included a number of projects. And so what happened was they did the projects they were able to do, which satisfied all of the requirements under that program. Some of these things they just didn't have the money for, so although they included it in their application, it wasn't things that we ended up funding in the end, because they didn't do them. And they submitted us the required receipts and whatnot. So that's why we allowed them to put it under this application.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Captain Mayor Kelly?
I'll say it again, and I say it every single time that we have one of these. I love this program. I think it's amazing how we're helping these community groups get to where they are, and to be able to offer everything that we offer in our community. It's absolutely incredible. And Councillor Johnson, I get excited about this as well as our facade program when it comes to things that this council have done in our tenure, and as well as the waterfront project, and as well as everything else that's coming up. I think we've done a lot for the community as a whole. Just one little question though. If someone was doing something, and it occurs to me when you're talking about the specialization of their dock for accessibility, if there's only one company, like in all of Nova Scotia or the Atlantic provinces, that can provide what a community group is looking for, would you still insist on two quotes if there's only one company that can actually do the work?
So the two quotes is to ensure that what they've been quoted is a fair competitive price. So in this case, for example, the second quote, I believe, and this is off the top of my head, I think that it came from outside Atlantic Canada. So there was another option, and they knew that. And they knew the end of the day, obviously, it was going to be more because you'd have more shipping costs and whatnot.
Right.
But we did require that they give us the second quote just to ensure, like, on the base price of what they're getting, that they are getting themselves a good price as well. So it's to help them, too, to ensure that, you know, you might think you have a really good quote, but you could go back to somebody else, regardless of where they are, and maybe they can give you a better price just because they can. Yeah.
So at least, you know, if there's someone else in the world that will do it, they find one other company in the world that they know that that's the closest one to do it, then that's, that's good to know.
Yep, and they can go with whichever quote they want to, so they submit the two quotes to us. We fund based on the lower one, and if they choose to go with a more expensive, then they choose add-ons. For the dock, for example, there was many add-ons they could put on it.
Right.
And if they choose to put those on, they're fully aware. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Councillor Fancy?
Just one question, and I probably know the answer before you even started, but I know in other grants in the past, and maybe not so from the region, but there has been where people could be able to do the work themselves. They could be counted as hours toward the grant application, but we don't allow that on with these type of funds, right?
Not in-kind work, so if you're not...
Yeah, in-kind work, that's exactly. Because a lot of groups are, they're limited with money, but they're maybe have a lot of manpower that's willing to work at it. Is that something we could consider, or is that just something too much to look at as cost factor?
So we wouldn't fund in-kind work because there's no transfer of money for it. That would just be giving the organization money. So, for example, under Canoe and Camera Club, they noted that some of the work they could do in-house, and they were able to do that, so they didn't have to include it as a cost. So they put in that, yes, you know, we're going to, I'm trying to think, they were building their canoe rack. They knew that they could purchase those materials and that they could do the work themselves. So what they submitted to us was the material cost, the two quotes for the materials, and then they noted that it was going to be so many hours for their people to do it, but they were doing that in kind because they knew they didn't have to go out and hire someone outside to do the work. Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, but what I'm saying on the other end is that something we could consider in the future, just because a lot of the small groups that just, a lot of things can't get done because there's no money, right? And what they're working with, that like they could be able to do those things, that they could be able to use the in-kind part of it.
But then we would be paying them to do the work.
We're paying people to be progressive, to try to work and try to get things done. And they don't have the money, but they have the manpower. So, I mean, there's a lot of grants that do that. So I'm just saying, is it something we could consider?
My understanding is we can't fund
it. We can't do it now, but the issue is the whole grant program will come up for review later this winter, and so that will be the time when you can raise that issue and ask if you wish to have it included, then you can have it included.
Yeah, just something to think about. I'm just putting it out there right now, something to think about.
It was taken out because then it, or it wasn't put in this policy, because, and I understand what you're saying, but there has to be some ownership and some responsibility of groups. And so our grant program, I would suggest, is the most generous in Nova Scotia of all 50 municipalities.
Absolutely.
And so if we then include in kind, as Megan said, then groups may just take the money and put it in the bank because they don't need the money. And so once you start including in kind, then it becomes difficult. But I don't want to get into that debate today because once we do a review of the policy, there'll be all kinds of different issues people want to bring up. And certainly that's a legitimate one that should be brought forward.
That's just saying that that's considered when we look at this call.
I'll note it on my list.
Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. And thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
Okay. That was 12.4. We have nothing under 13.0 planning or 14.4 in courts. We are now at 13.0 in camera. A motion to go in camera would be appropriate. Moved by Councilor Fraley, seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion?
ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. We are now in camera and we will take the